That was the Alphabet Rockers right here on the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone. Over the break, we had Poddington Bear. And before the break, Bunny Hall and Friends from This Little Light. You heard Sesame Street's Leela with The Color of Me and Epidermis with Sarah Ernst. The kids crew are with me here at the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and on Zoom with our guests, Dr. Nina Jablonski and Dr. Holly McGee. Don't forget, this episode comes with a learning guide. It meets and cites educational standards. You can find it at childrenshour.org. Look for The Skin We're In and bring the Children's Hour into the classroom. Let's go over to Cade from our kids crew.
So do you think that the discrimination between certain groups was because of the actual color of the skin or the cultures and ethnicities around them?
This is a really great question. The notion of there being separate races, it's a fiction. If you really look at humanity, if you look at human beings, we are 98, 99% the same. A lot of these ideas came about in the 14th and the 15th century when European explorers were able to make their way across the Atlantic and go to places where there were people who looked very different from them. Unfortunately, they made observations based off of the cultures in which they lived. Because things were so very different, it just allowed an opportunity for people to make negative ideas. They projected negative ideas onto people when they didn't have correct information. And unfortunately, a lot of that just kind of filtered down through the generations. And we have been left with a lot of that negative information that we need to correct today.
Why do you think it's taken so long for these negative notions about skin color to disappear?
Yeah, why do you think these negative ideas about skin color are so persistent?
If we're going to be completely honest, the reason that a lot of these ideas stuck around for so long was because, to be quite honest, these negative ideas benefited some people. These negative ideas justified why some people have access to better education, better homes, better jobs, things of that nature. And it really has not been until maybe our parents, our grandparents' generation, where society really had to take stock and look around and say, this simply is not right. If we are going to live in a free and equal society, then we really do need to start treating people fairly and equitably, regardless of these arbitrary things such as skin color or hair or the way people dress.
What are people's motives behind judging people by their skin color? Like, I understand people do it, but I just want to know, like, why? What makes them do it?
Thank you so much, Amaya, for that question. You know, there are a lot of different reasons why people judge other people based on their skin color. I can speak from personal experience. One, a lot of times when people treat you unfairly, it's because they feel badly somehow about themselves. I know it sounds kind of silly. Think about it. Imagine, Amaya, you make a really good grade on a test. You are celebrated. Someone says, oh, you did a good job. Good job. Good job. But there's someone who's standing next to you who feels jealous that they didn't get the kudos. They didn't get patted on the back. Now, they'll never say to themselves, maybe I should just work harder. Maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. Instead, what they'll say is they'll take the easy way out and they'll say, she got a shortcut. She cheated, right? They want to feel better about themselves. Two, sometimes people need to feel better about themselves. And so what they do is they try to make somebody else feel worse about themselves. And that is a really cowardly thing to do. But here's the thing. Here's the trick, Amaya. You have the power to recognize when this is happening in your life. You have the power to recognize when someone is being unfair to you. They're treating you a different way because maybe of your gender. You have the power to say, you don't get to treat me that way. You don't get to talk to me that way because of your perception. And you have every right to speak up for yourself.
So some discrimination happens subconsciously, as in certain racial groups and people with different skin colors getting worse or better jobs. Do you think that is people being racist or just a unknown subconscious?
It's like so embedded in what they do that they don't even see it anymore.
Yeah, like studies have been done because I'm taking a race and ethnicities class.
That's a really great question. But if you think about it, that's not really subconscious. That is an inherited legacy of discrimination, right? So let's take, for example, me. I have a PhD. Less than 2% of Black women in the United States hold a PhD. Now, does that mean that Black women are not smart enough to have PhDs? No, well, really, what that is more an indication of is that there are structures in place that make it more difficult for Black women to succeed in particular avenues. For a very long time in the United States, there have been professions that were basically reserved for Black Americans because they were seen as non-skilled jobs or jobs that didn't have a lot of respect attached to them. And so for a long time in the United States, a lot of those jobs were either reserved for or simply ascribed to people who were non-white because it was a way of ordering society and creating different hierarchies in society. So saying that there were some people who were more important, some people who were less important. And so when you see that happening in American society today, that's just a legacy of a past way that we used to do things. But you do see this changing. People of all races, of all genders, moving into different professions and doing different jobs. And that is slowly changing.
But the bias is still there. And so we have to recognize that the structure that Holly is talking about actually has become almost invisible to people because it is the structure which organized much of the modern United States as a country. These biases that sort of stick with us like ghosts of the past are something that we now can be more aware of and we can work to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Your book really helps that. It's called It's Just Skin, Silly. You're listening to The Children's Hour. Our guests you have been hearing have been Dr. Nina Jablonski and Dr. Holly McGee. They have published a book called It's Just Skin, Silly. We're going to learn more about skin with Dr. Adnan Mir in just a moment. Thanks for being with us, Dr. McGee and Dr. Jablonski. We learned a lot from you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
You're listening to The Children's Hour, and this is the One Tribe Collective's Grammy-nominated release.
Come on, it's in the making. Yeah, you better believe it.
episode comes with a learning guide. You can find it at childrenshour.org. Look for skin. You're listening to the Children's Hour. Today we're learning about skin, and we've been hearing about what people think about skin, but let's learn some science about skin and how we can best take care of our skin with a pediatric dermatologist. Dr. Adnan Mir, he resides in the Bronx, New York. He's at Einstein University's Montefiore Medical Center. You're with us today on the Children's Hour. Welcome to the Children's Hour, Dr. Mir.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We're really glad to have you. We've been hearing about skin in terms of its cultural and social and how people judge each other based on skin. But isn't everyone's skin, aside from the amount of melanin in it, pretty much the same?
Yep. We all, if you look at it under a microscope, pretty much everybody's skin looks the same. Now, there are definitely people out there who have a big birthmark or who have, you know, something else that's different about their skin. But, you know, that doesn't make it bad. It just makes it different.
Dr. Mir, before we jump into all our questions, describe for us really the organ of skin. We're all kind of like, really? It's an organ? It's on the outside of our body. So what makes skin skin?
So skin is made up of a couple of different layers. There's the one we all know about, the epidermis, and that's made up of a layer of cells whose job it is to keep what's inside in and what's outside out. It forms a protective barrier between you and the outside world. Then there's other parts of the skin that start in the dermis, which is right beneath the epidermis. And the dermis is where your sweat glands live. The dermis is where all the blood vessels are. The dermis is where the nerves are. Specialized parts of your skin produce hair and nails, and all of those are important for different reasons. But in general, it's multiple different cell types working together to create a barrier to produce hormones, like Dr. Jablonski talked about with vitamin D, and to produce sweat so we don't overheat.
How do you know if your skin is healthy or not?
That's a great question. There are all kinds of ways to tell if your skin is healthy. Getting a few freckles on your nose, that lets me know that you've had some sun exposure. As getting other sorts of sunspots, like little red blood vessels or little spots. But in general, if you're not itchy, if your skin doesn't feel dry, you probably have pretty healthy skin when you're young. And our goal is to keep it that way.
Why do we need sunscreen, and is it really that important?
It is important. We need sunscreen for two main reasons. One of them is that we want to prevent skin cancer. Because people of all different skin colors have moved all over the world, people are exposed to more or less sunlight and ultraviolet radiation than our melanin is prepared to handle. And the use of sunscreen, starting when you're young, can help prevent skin cancer when you get older. It can prevent sunburns, which are just painful. And that's sort of an indicator that you've damaged your skin and you're probably causing genetic damage to your skin. And that genetic damage is what eventually causes skin cancer. And the last one, and for some people, the most important one, is that wearing sunscreen keeps you from looking older when you're young.
Really?
Yep. It's years and years of sun exposure that give us wrinkles as we get older.
It's worth it.
Yeah, it's never too late to start wearing sunscreen.
Are our lips like a different kind of skin?
That's a great question. Yes. So every part of your body that interacts with the outside world, whether it's on your body or in your body, like inside your mouth, has what we call an epithelium. And an epithelium is a layer that keeps outside from inside. And those layers have different functions. Your lips are a kind of epithelium that we call mucosa. We call that skin on your lips mucosa because they secrete saliva and they secrete other mucus. And so it is a specialized type of skin on your lips. It's a different kind of epithelium that covers your eyes, a different kind in your mouth, and a different kind in your intestines and in your stomach.
How does skin react over time?
Yeah, it kind of seems like old people have really thin, papery, wrinkly skin, and then young people have this nice, plump skin.
Yep. So we have lots of proteins in our dermis that hold our skin together. We have collagen, we have elastic fibers, and like it sounds, elastic fibers give your skin some stretchiness. And as we get older, we lose collagen, we lose elastic tissue, and a lot of the reasons we lose collagen and elastic tissue, I bet you know what I'm going to say.
Is it the sunscreen?
Is sun exposure.
Are you going to tell us that we have to have sunscreen on our lips too?
Well, you know, it is really important to keep our lips protected from the sun because we want to prevent skin cancer on our lips.
So we have to protect our lips too. We're learning about the science of skin with Dr. Adnan Mir. More coming up.
You're listening to The Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting The Children's Hour. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund.